Welcome to the only podcast that's anti-left, anti-PC, anti-stupidity, and pro-Australia. This is your weekly dose of common sense with Corey Bernardi.
Hey everyone, it's Corey Bernardi here. Welcome to another weekly dose of common sense. It's great to have you tuning in, and we've got a lot to get through today, including just what is going on with our children. And it's not our children's fault. It's the councils, the schools, the state governments. The poison that has been drip-fed into our kids' minds is going to have a profound long-term effect. We're going to talk through some of these programs that are going on in your schools that might be affecting your children or your grandchildren or even other people's children. And I'd be really interested in your feedback on it. We're also going to revisit some inconvenient truths. That was the name, if you recall, of a mockumentary put forward by Al Gore. It alarmed half of the world, and we're going to go through some of the claims because the anniversary of its release is coming up. I'll have a couple of words to say about the royal wedding. I'm sure you might have been one of the people that tuned in. There were about 5 million Australians that watched the royal wedding, and everyone seems to have an opinion. Just like they've got an opinion and they send it through in your say. We've got a bumper crop of emails. So keep them coming, corey@coreybernardi.com, or go to my website at coreybernardi.com and leave a comment there and we'll pick some of those up. But without further ado, let's get into your weekly dose of common sense.
Do you think you've got what it takes? Become a member. Be part of the conservative revolution at conservatives.org.au.
Our children are unwitting participants in a dangerous social experiment. Their minds and their identities are part of an indoctrination program that threatens the very foundational values of our society. It's happening in our schools, it's happening in our councils, our state and federal governments, and every single parent should be worried. In fact, they should be very worried. Now, most people would be aware of the federally funded Safe Schools program. Now, the founder of Safe Schools confessed that it was a Marxist indoctrination disguised as an anti-bullying program. I need to remind you that it encouraged pre-teen children to think about being in a same-sex relationship. It referred them to sexually deviant websites and told them that they, rather than biology, actually determined if they were male or female. Now, I belled the cat many years ago, as did some of my colleagues in the parliament, and our concerns were dismissed as lies, either by those that were behind these programs or those too dumb to know what they were actually talking about. Eventually, the federal government funding was stopped, but the indoctrination hasn't. We've now got Victorian councils. They're removing books from libraries because they perpetuate the gender stereotyping that compromises the fiction of gender fluidity. Now, you may be familiar with the subversive theory that boys and girls are actually different. Yes, they're complementary, but they are certainly different. Well, apparently that's too dangerous to let continue. So it's time to burn some books. In South Australia, 12-year-olds are being asked by their school to complete surveys discussing their favourite sexual proclivities and the type of lube they should be using. This week on Sky News, presenter Ross Cameron revealed information about one Sydney girls' school where apparently every single student has been diagnosed with one mental illness or another. I had a concerned father contact me this week about Lesbian Day at his child's school. Now, when he contacted the principal of the school, he said he was powerless to stop it because it was a student-led initiative. Imagine that, spontaneous uprising of Lesbian Day. In Queensland, children as young as 4 have been encouraged to undertake 2.5-hour group therapy sessions where government bureaucrats actually make audio recordings of these kids' thoughts on friends and family. Now, in true Big Brother fashion, if the bureaucrats become, and I quote, concerned about my safety because something I say during the workshops, then they will need to talk to people who can help me. Well, who is going to help us and save us from these Eastern Bloc family surveillance sessions that could unleash the very thought police to protect children from those dangerous heteronormative Christian or plain middle-class views that may be expressed around the house? This poison has happened in other Anglosphere countries, and it's now happening here. Time to say enough is enough. Unfortunately, The voices prepared to speak up are few and far between. These programs are dreamed up by radical social warriors. They are funded and fostered by governments, and they're foisted on children with parents blissfully unaware. And the damage has already been felt. Too many of our current generation are less resilient. They're less equipped to cope with adult life than ever before. They have this sense of entitlement, this delusion and self-absorption that has been fostered by these foolish social experiments, and it's only going to create even greater problems in the future. It's time we did something about it. We have to raise our collective voice to put a stop to this madness.
Enjoying your weekly dose of common sense with Corey Bernardi? You need to get on board with the Australian Conservatives. Go to conservatives.org.au and join the party.
So were you one of the 5 million Australians who tuned in and watched the royal wedding with Meghan Markle and Prince Harry, the Duke and Duchess of Sussex, as they're now known? I wasn't one of them. I sat in another room actually watching Netflix while my wife and her friends decided to enjoy the spectacle of the royal wedding. But it's fascinating to me, the royal family. I support the constitutional monarchy. I think the arrangements we have in our constitution is absolutely valid. But I'm incredulous, quite frankly, at the dignity that Her Majesty the Queen and members of the royal family have conducted themselves with through highs and lows, thick and thin. And one of the things I read about the royal family the other day is that they have what's termed the Marmite strategy. Now, Marmite, to those of you who don't know, is the British equivalent of Vegemite. And the Marmite strategy is one where no one detects or perceives that the product is changing, but there are incremental changes. There's a slight change in the label. There's a slight change in the recipe. There's a slight change in the jar. And the royal family is embracing the Marmite strategy to evolve from one of the most revered institutions, but slowly modernizing itself. And we saw an element of that in the royal wedding. It was almost inconceivable to imagine you'd have this gospel preacher and a gospel choir, that a prince would marry a Hollywood starlet or a movie star that was biracial, that had been married before. These things were kind of inconceivable to many people, and yet the royal family has carried this off with aplomb. Now, how it works out, we're never going to know. We know there's been some less than savoury characters, I guess, that have got into the royal family, but the institution itself seems to hang on, and I think it is increasingly actually revered by a great many people around the world. And that's because there's a sense of permanence to it. There's a sense of pageantry. There's a sense of fantasy, I think, for many people. And they're above the day-to-day cut and thrust of politics, of maybe our lives that we have. And I just have a tremendous respect for Her Majesty the Queen and the dignity with which she's carried herself off. And I guess it's also relevant that this week is the birth of Queen Victoria, the second longest-serving British monarch. She was born on the 24th of May in 1819. She reigned for nearly 64 years. Now, that's only surpassed by our current queen. And she led what is now known as the Victorian Age. She was the very first English monarch to give her name to a period of time whilst still living. And that age was known for its strong moral standards. It had rapid scientific and technological advances. For example, they developed steamships and coal-fired power and electrified trains and photography, the telegraph, and they had major medical breakthroughs. It resulted in a rise in prosperity and population and saw Britain become an imperial and maritime superpower. Essentially, during the Victorian era, Britain ruled half the world. She was known as a person of formidable strength and impeccable character, and she shaped what it was to be English, to be an English lady, and in ipso facto, what it meant to be an English gentleman as well. She was also famous for the saying, and it's now going into legend, where when someone made an inappropriate joke in her presence, She used to say, we are not amused, or one is not amused. Now, since her passing, cultural Marxists are working hard, very, very hard, to unravel the morality, the confidence, the pride, the cohesiveness and prosperity that Western societies inherited from Queen Victoria's significant reign and legacy. I, for one, want to preserve it. I for one, think that there are some things worth maintaining. And, you know, the morality, the pride, the cohesiveness, the prosperity and the dignity that has been shown by Queen Victoria and her successor in Queen Elizabeth II, and I hope by succeeding generations of the royal family, will hold Western civilization together as we face enormous challenges. Now, I'm a supporter of the royal family. Many of the listeners out there I know will be Republicans and say Australia should stand on its own 2 feet. Well, we do. It doesn't detract from the fact that, you know, the royal family has played a pivotal role in global history, in our nation's history, and I'm going to be mindful of that. Let me know what you think. Corey at coreybernardi.com. We can have a further chat about it next week.
Like what you hear? Support the Australian Conservatives at conservatives.org.au.
Do you remember Al Gore? He was the Vice President of the United States who ran against George W. Bush and lost in the infamous hanging Chad election, where a few votes in Florida determined the leader of the free world. Well, Al Gore was clearly disappointed. He was a disciple of Bill Clinton, but he dusted himself off, much like Clinton did, and went out and made a fortune producing a mockumentary, a junk science video, which was released on the 24th of May in 2006. It was called An Inconvenient Truth, and it painted an apocalyptic version of the future because man was apparently changing the climate through the emissions of carbon dioxide. Now, carbon dioxide is that gas that we all exhale. So basically, every time we breathe, apparently we're destroying the planet. It was a shameless film of junk science, but it propelled Gore into a climate evangelist. It made him hundreds of millions of dollars. He's got a lavish mansion, properties, he's got planes, and he's got a carbon footprint the size of a small city. But apparently that's okay because he's doing good. Now, Gore's hypothesis was that man's carbon dioxide emissions are dangerously heating the globe. And it was one of these hypotheses that the goalposts continued to move. It was global warming, and then it became climate change, and it became this and that and the other. And the predictions changed so often that no one can really call this scientific. Now, since the film's release, this hypothesis has taken more hits, and yet still people are convinced, they're brainwashed into thinking, you know, man is destroying planet Earth by heating the atmosphere. Now, I know there are many scientists that rely on grants from governments and others, but there are too many people in government that believe this hoo-ha as well. Now, the centerpiece of Gore's Inconvenient Truth video was the hockey stick graph. It's been utterly discredited. We had the emails of what was termed Climategate, and that exposed massive manipulation and collusion by once trusted scientists, institutions, and their peer review process. All of it painted a picture that we were being gamed so that the radicals could get more control of our economy, the scientists could get more cash, and government could insert themselves at the center of everything. Do you remember how they talked about carbon dioxide was driving temperature? Well, polar ice cores clearly show that concentrations of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere lag temperature, and it lags it by centuries. And global average temperatures have risen very, very little, notwithstanding the fact that Al Gore continues to say that we've only got 3 or 4 or 5 years before it's going to be irreversible. He's been saying that for 10 or 15 years now, and most of his predictions haven't come to pass. Global average temperatures have risen so little, nowhere near what the climate models predict, that the climate models can only be wrong. Global sea ice is not melted away as predicted. Polar bear numbers are actually growing. They're not declining. And in fact, they're becoming quite a pest in some Eskimo communities. Now, you go to satellite pictures. It shows that the continents are greening. They're not browning. The deserts are shrinking. They're not growing. And over 80% of Pacific islands have been found to have actually grown in surface area or maintained their size. And this is notwithstanding the fact that these Pacific island leaders often go and claim hundreds of millions of dollars or ask for it to mitigate the effects of this climate change. What about hurricanes? Well, hurricane numbers and strength have not increased, despite what Al Gore told us. And in fact, they've fallen by 25% since the last cyclical peak in 2005-2006. And thermometer-based records, of course, have been identified as being compromised because they're chock full of what they call a urban heat island effect, where a surface-based temperature thermometer record was there. It's now surrounded by concrete and buildings, and so naturally the heat island effect drives up that. But when you compare it with nearly 40 years of satellite records of global temperatures, which are unaffected by this urban heat island effect and other man-made effects, they continually show significantly less warming than the surface temperature records that are relied on by the alarmists. Now, unfortunately, this poison has been promulgated through our school system, it's been promulgated by the media, and it's been absorbed by the political class. And they continue to implement damaging policies that don't do anything for the environment, but they make our cost of living prohibitive. They put government at the centre of everything. They make the rent seekers reliant, even more reliant, on taxpayer funding. And if you want any evidence of that, have a look at the electricity industry in Australia. Climate change policy, global warming policy, this renewable energy policy is costing us billions of dollars and putting the household electricity bill up by a pile every single quarter. It's time to call it out. There's some inconvenient truths about one of the great scams of our time, and that is an inconvenient truth put forward by Al Gore.
You're listening to your weekly dose of common sense with Corey Bernardi.
Well, it's time for your say, and I've got to be fair to say that we've had more emails this week, more comments than I can recall getting in recent times. Now, a lot of them I won't be able to address because they, you know, take into account a whole range of complicated questions that are more deserving of specific airtime. So we'll try and get to some of those major issues at a future date. But here we go. We'll start off with Brian. And Brian has said, I really enjoy your podcast. Good on you, Brian. I know you and Pauline Hanson don't always agree on issues, but wouldn't it be beneficial for all conservatives if you and like-minded party could find some common ground and present a united front that would give some real political opposition? I'd love to hear your thoughts. Well, Brian, you're quite right. In an ideal world, we want to bring conservatives together. The real problem is that political parties are often led by people, individuals who have very fixed and definite views about the way they should go. I'm one of those people. I'm a social conservative. I believe in social structures, but I'm also a deregulator. I want to see smaller government. I want to see more business thrive and prosper. I want to see lower taxes. And, you know, that's an unusual position, I think, for many conservatives. It's perhaps a traditional liberal position, if I can put it like that, which the philosophy that the Liberal Party abandoned. Now, there are many conservatives who are, like the Hanson Party, who call themselves conservative, who are about nationalising industry. They're about greater government intervention. They care less about the social issues. And yet, my argument is that if we lose the culture wars, if we lose the battle grounds for our founding ethos, well, what do we have left? We just have an economic system where everyone is an economic unit. I don't think that's healthy. But that's not to say we don't look for common ground where we can find it. I agree with One Nation on a number of things. I agree with the Liberal Democrats on a number of things. Occasionally, I think maybe once, I agree with Darren Hinch, or he might have agreed with me. I never found much to agree with Jackie Lambie, unfortunately. She was just very angry at me all the time. But we do what we can. I want to grow the Conservative voice. I want to make the major parties pay more attention to the principles, to the values, and I want to apply a consistent approach to getting the best possible outcome for all Australians. I think that will pay dividends in the long run. It's not opportunistic, it's not short term, but I think it's vitally important to our success. Alec and Beth, or actually this is from Beth, but the email says from Alec and Beth. It says, "Hi Corey, I'm concerned about the Chinese buy-up of Australia. Is this being addressed? The Chinese government donations to major political parties." Well, Beth, I'm concerned about that too. The Chinese are having undue influence on our economy, on our body politic, and they're controlling too many strategic resources. Now, that's impolitic to say, but it's the absolute truth. The Chinese are playing a very, very long game, and we have to be aware of what's going on. They're infiltrating our educational institutions, they are buying influence, and we've got to put a stop to it. The simple thing is, we should practice the ethic of reciprocity. If we're not able to buy land or strategic assets in China, then why should we allow Chinese state government firms or Chinese businesses to buy the same in Australia? We want to encourage trade. We want to sell them our resources, our products. We want to buy products from them. But we should practice the ethic of reciprocity. If they've got barriers into their economy, we should have barriers into ours. There's no virtue in being the Puritan on the block when you're being taken advantage of by another country. Chinese government donations to major political parties, I've been through that. I was the one that exposed Sam Dastyari. I was exposed, you know, the hypocrisy of the major parties. It still goes on. Unfortunately, they're still working through it. It's very hard to track whether a donation comes from a foreign entity or not, particularly, you know, in real time, but we've got to do something about donations. They should be capped at a certain amount. They should only come from individuals, and they should be disclosed in real time. That would go a large way to cleaning up the concerns. And then, you know, you can track down whether they're from foreign donors or not. Dylan writes, says, "I appreciate the podcast. Listen to it when letterboxing. I see the pros and cons of a longer and shorter podcast, but all I know is each time I listen, it finishes before I finish the blocks I've set myself to letterbox. It's quite frustrating. Do you want me to letterbox less or walk faster?" Ha, good on you, Dylan. Dylan's out there letterboxing the Australian Conservatives material. He is an active Conservative that is working hard to help change the country, to bring about awareness. And, you know, for all the people who say, "Oh, what are you doing with the political party?" I can say, what are you doing? We're out there all the time. There's a whole bunch of us doing as much as we possibly can to spread the message, either in social media or getting into the normal media, circulating this podcast and my weekly dose of common sense email, or going out there and letterboxing. Good on you, Dylan. I want you to walk faster, letterbox more, and share more, if I can ask that, or is that too much to ask? But thanks for your contribution. Mitch has written to me asking what my position is on a combined national service and alternative civilian service scheme, which require people to attend 2 or so years of defence, public ambulance, SES hospitals, public service, etc. You know, Mitch, instinctively I support it. I think public service is important. I think national service has worked in so many countries around the world, and yet it seems too hard to implement here. We have this entitlement mentality where I'm entitled to do nothing, I'm entitled to get the dole, I'm entitled to get on the drugs, and you're not entitled to stop me. We've got to arrest this decline. We've got to teach our young people they've got some responsibilities. Let's give them some skills other than basket weaving that they get at university, or you know, how to argue leftism and Marxism. Let's get them out there so that they can have some practical skills that'll make them better adults, that'll serve the community. And whether it's in defence capacity or whether it be in a voluntary capacity or a service obligation with organisations like Meals on Wheels or those that are truly helping the underprivileged, it can't do any harm. The problem is it takes a huge administrative commitment because we can't make people do anything they don't want to do in this day and age. Asking them to close the door or use their manners, please and thank you, is somehow a great sin. Imagine trying to get them into the army and what our officers there would have to deal with. So it's not a perfect solution, Mitch, but I agree with the principle of it. Neil says, many Australians are sick of seeing our politicians in all levels of government on television day in, day out. You have to wonder what they actually carry out their duties of running government. However, in saying this, I say, see little of yourself on the screen. You've got to get your face on the 6 o'clock news as much as possible. Yeah, you're right, Neil. And you know what? I spend hours every day trying to promote the conservative cause. Sometimes we get on the box, sometimes we don't. But it doesn't matter how much we get on the TV. Most people don't see it. The people that are tuning into the 6 o'clock news on the major channels are no longer there. The people who watch Sky News are limited and they're political activists. And I'm on Sky, you know, three or four times a week sometimes. I try and do talkback radio. I try and get in the newspapers. You know, we are out there as an individual person doing our darndest to promote the news, the cause, and the importance of conservative principles in everything that we do. It's never going to meet the standards, but the best thing we can do, to be honest, if you want the greatest exposure you can, you've actually got to build this communications network. And that's best done through social media. It's done through podcasts like this, through my blog. It goes out to hundreds of thousands of people every single week. And we need people to pay attention to that. Some of the greatest media communicators in this day and age, you won't see on the 6 o'clock news. The ones that are communicating with young people are doing it through Instagram, through Facebook, through all of these avenues and vehicles that, you know, a lot of the older generation are no longer participating in. We have to embrace new media as well as the old media, and we're doing our utmost to do it. You can help us by going out and spreading the message, spreading the word that people should be tuning in. But thanks, Neil. Kevin says, I love listening to your podcast. That's why I'm reading your email, Kevin. And just listen to the vaping section. Kevin says he's been vaping for 9 years. It saved his life, but he wants to correct me. He says, vaping is not illegal in Australia. It's a selling of nicotine liquid here that is illegal. And this happened not long after I made the switch. You can import it for personal use legally in either ready-to-use strength or flavour of your choice, or in a straight nicotine liquid and mixed down to your preference. You're quite right, Kevin. It's not illegal to import it. I just wonder why people have to import it and run this gauntlet. Why you can't go down to your local store and purchase it, because it's going to save lives just like it has yours. Good on you, Kevin. You're right. I'm not going to say I was wrong, but maybe I was. Anyway, Julie, can I just say I think you're fabulous? I love these emails. Thank you, Julie. But you need to be more politically incorrect if you are to bring this country back into line. Islam is an issue. Is there any chance will it be classified as a cult and lose its protection under our religious constitution? Well, the short answer to that is I don't think so, Julie. I do think Islam is a problem, but we have freedom of religion, and freedom of religion is essentially freedom of thought. You cannot ban people from thinking certain things and talking about it and proselytizing it if that's what they want to do, as long as they're not preaching violence. The unfortunate thing is Muhammad himself preached violence again and again and again, and there's some nutbags who take all that literally all these centuries later, and they're out there justifying bad behavior in the name of Islam. You're right, Julie, about political incorrectness is necessary to draw awareness. But the challenge is, the great challenge is, you can over-egg the pudding. And I've been out there, it was non-PC to even talk about banning the burqa or Islam 5 or 6 years ago. It used to cause outrage. Now it's mainstream. Everyone talking about it, and they think, yeah, that's entirely reasonable. Same with immigration, same with tax policy. All of these things that apparently were so outrageous are now regular. So, you know, I don't want to over-egg the pudding too much, but you've got to cut through sometimes. But Julie, you know, one time I said something on TV about and used some intemperate language is how I would describe it. And the abuse I got from so many supporters that were saying, oh, how outrageous, how can you do that? You've got to have more dignity. So I'm treading that fine line. I've been non-PC, talking about the things that are important, but doing it in a way which is respectful, sincere, and is going to stand the test of time. That's really what I'm trying to do. Thank you, Julie. Thank you to all the people that have emailed me, Corey@CoreyBernardi.com. Keep your say coming in so we can have a conversation on the Weekly Dose of Common Sense every single week.
Keep listening. This is your Weekly Dose of Common Sense with Corey Bernardi.
That's all we've got time for this week. Thanks so much for tuning in. Keep your feedback coming by sending an email to Corey@CoreyBernardi.com and tell your friends and family that this is where you can get your weekly dose of common sense.
This is your weekly dose of common sense with Corey Bernardi.